Okay, the order this morning is we have Mark Giguère from the National Archives and Records Administration will speak first, then there will be me, and then there will be Danielle Caron from Library and Archives Canada who will do some commentary. And then we'll finish off with hopefully about 20 minutes of question and answer at the end of the session. We've got an hour and a half, so it's a good length of time to really get our teeth into the topic. And I'll start off by introducing Mark Giguère. Mark is the Lead Information Technology Policy and Planning for the Office of Records Services Modern Records Program at the National Archives and Records Administration at College Park. His primary responsibilities in that position include acting as Program Co-Manager of the President's Electronic Records Management e-Government Initiative, advising agencies in the design of electronic record-keeping systems. Formerly, he was electronic records manager for the City of Philadelphia from 1995 to 1997. He has a doctorate in information science from the State University of New York at Albany, and his research interests and areas of expertise include classification theory, knowledge organization, information design systems, and information system design, as well as electronic records management. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Giguère.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me all right? If it starts fading, just wave in the back and I'll speak louder. I'd like to welcome everyone to this introductory session of the first joint conference of SAA, COSA, and NAGARA. And I'd also like to welcome you to Washington, D.C., the swamp that it is this time of the year. Pardon the informal attire, but I just know what it gets like. I'd like to thank Adrian for pulling the session together, and I want to talk a little bit about institutional approaches, and institutional approaches is sort of a function of your unit of scale. I'd like to think that the approaches that I'm about to describe that we're taking at the National Archives of the United States are scalable approaches. So these are institutional approaches, techniques that can work at the unit of your institution, or can scale up to potentially, in our case, the entire federal government of the United States of America. Let's see. It works. So to do this, I want to first give you a little background about the goals of the National Archives and the tactics that we employ to reach those goals, and then I want to get to the actual institutional approaches that I'm alluding to, specifically the Electronic Records Management e-Government Initiative that was alluded to in my bio, the role of the federal enterprise architecture in managing IT investment for the U.S. federal government, and the records management profile, which is the approach that we adopted to try to tie these two management, to tie together the management techniques of the federal enterprise architecture with sound records management practices that were developed as part of the Electronic Records Management e-Government Initiative. I'm not quite sure, I didn't get to speak to someone on the program committee yet, so I'm not sure if these slides are going to be available on the conference website, but if they're not, my email address is at the end, so feel free to email me and I can send you a copy. And I think we agreed we're going to try to hold the questions till the end. And there should be ample time, about 20 minutes or so for that. There are three records management goals that NARA tries to emphasize. Economic, and they span across the life cycle of records. Economic and effective creation of materials that meet agencies' business needs, making sure that those records that are created by those business processes are maintained as long as are necessary for agency business, and in the case of those materials that are appraised as permanent, for the life of the Republic, and making sure that those materials are capable of being preserved in a manner such as to enhance secondary use. To do that, there are a series of goals that I wanted to cover that we employ and then get down to subsequently to the level of tactics that we use to implement these goals. The way that we adopt to the current business environment, and I'm sure as you are all aware, those of us operating in a government situation, things are changing. We're trying to function more like business. We're trying to enhance the ability of our government business partners to do business with us electronically. And to do so, you have to embrace a series of broad tenets, which are basically the legs of the approaches, the legs of the stools that represent the approaches that we're taking to facilitate that transition to electronic government. These are a systematic approach to managing records, coordinating and integrating records management into general information management practices, and making sure that the records management programs that we're building for our government clients are efficient and effective, both for the internal government clients that are creating those records and for the external to government users of those records. As such, I want to emphasize that the three things that I'm going to interconnect, I think, are very demonstrative of the tactics which we're employing to reach those goals on an institutional basis. And once again, institution is scalable, both institutionally, I mean, at the National Archives, and institutionally, I mean, in the entire U.S. federal government sector. That's making sure that we address records management concerns early in the life cycle of systems that generate electronic records. Trying to standardize the approaches, so as opposed to using an approach where 1,000 flowers bloom, we try to use the scythe a little bit and narrow it down to maybe a couple hundred different approaches. You have to understand in the federal context, our National Archives interacts with over 350 federal agencies that have widely varying latitude as to how they implement their records management programs. As such, an ancillary tactic is making sure that we embed these records management processes into their business process, as well as the systems that they develop to support that business process via using technology. So the first leg of the stool of interconnectedness that I want to build for you is talking about the President's Electronic Records Management e-Government Initiative. And I think as we move through this material and then we move on to Adrian's presentation, you'll see several similarities between the approaches that we've taken and the Australasian approach. Similarities of standards, similarities of specifying some creation and transfer requirements, similarities in using XML to wrap records so as to enhance their usability, their secondary usability, and their primary usability. The Electronic Records Management e-Government Initiative was one of the planks of the President's management agenda in order to enable government to function with its business partners in an electronic means. The business partners that we're talking about are government doing business with state and local governments, the federal government doing business with citizenry, the federal government doing business with businesses, and the federal government doing business with itself. The way that the President advanced this plank of his agenda was to call together a task force of senior agency leaders to select from the lines of business that the U.S. federal government is involved in, which number some more than 400, to select candidate lines of business that could be made electronic to those business partners that I just outlined. Electronic records management was selected as one of those lines of business, and we met in a facilitated meeting with OMB, partner agencies that had been designated by the administration as having best practices in electronic records management, and the records management community in the federal sector. And we developed a vision for this initiative, which is to effectively manage and facilitate access in order to support agency decision making. from that vision, which was agreed upon by the community writ large, as I just described, there were specific goals for the initiative which were developed. These goals were specified back in, I think, 2002. It's been a long time. Integration, and you'll notice that there's similarities between these goals, which were agreed upon by a larger community, and the strategies and tactics that I just outlined for you that the National Archives takes in achieving its mission. You'll notice that the first goal, integration of RM with IM practices, supporting interoperability so as to enhance decision making, ensuring access for as long as those records are needed, have a certain striking parallelism to the tactics that we've adopted institutionally to ensure effective management of information. Unlike the other presidential electronic records management initiatives, which were basically the building of web-based portals to provide services to particular sectors, this initiative was a policy initiative, and it was broken out into three areas based on the OMB-designated partner agencies that the administration felt had demonstrated best practices in specific areas of electronic records management. One was EPA. EPA was one of the first agencies and one of the biggest cabinet-level agencies to attempt to deploy a pilot that was an enterprise-wide automated solution to manage the records generated by the agency. That system, called the Electronic Document Records Management System, or ERDMS, as a result of deploying that pilot over the course of the past 3 years, there were a series of guidance products, which are cited here and are also cited off of our website, which detail the processes through which EPA proceeded in the deployment of the ERDM system, starting with building a business case for getting an enterprise-wide automated solution, through specifying particular requirements that were needed so as to integrate the records management solution into broader needs such as content management, to providing a guidance structure for managing the pilot and specifying criteria via which they selected the product that was used for the pilot. The next issue area that is part of the initiative, is the area called Information Management Standards. How many people in the audience are familiar with Department of Defense Design Criteria 5015.2? Well, as part of this initiative, we have worked through with DOD two new versions of the standard. Version 2, and as you may be aware, published in the Federal Register last week, was version 3 of the standard, which is now out for a 30-day comment period. What this standard is a specification of functional requirements that records management application software needs to meet in order to manage records in conformance with the Federal Records Act for federal agencies. There is a counterpart program of this within DOD, via which the Joint Interoperability Test Command of the Army certifies software that meets this criteria. And the last issue area of this initiative that I'd like to speak about is the issue area that is based at the National Archives. So we had two roles. One was functioning as the unit that provided the guidance for this issue area, as well as managing the overall initiative, all three parts. And that's transfer of permanent electronic records to the National Archives. What this primarily consisted of was specifying a series of transfer requirements for various formats that the community of interest felt that we needed to expand into. Prior to the start of this initiative, all that NARA would accept electronic records in the only formats were ASCII text, EBCDIC text, and SGML marked up text. that was exceedingly and unrealistic. There was not sufficient flexibility to address the plethora of formats, as I'm sure you're all aware, that are being created in the government environment. So the community specified six areas in which they wanted us to start expanding to accept records, and these are transfer criteria for permanent records in the web format, the digital photography format, the GIS format, the PDF format, textual, scanned images of textual records formats, and email records. There, as part of this issuary, we also developed some XML wrapping, which is not publicly available, employing the metadata encoding and transmission standard. And we also recently have developed specifications via use cases for records management service components to be deployed in a service-oriented architecture, which is available on our ERA website. So there's one leg of the stool. Now let's tie it to something that's a little bit external to us, which is the administration's intent on deploying a federal enterprise architecture. The FEA is basically a management tool deployed by the Office of Management and Budget to manage the IT investment of the federal government in a sound way, such that, and you'll notice that the outcomes of this exactly parallel the outcomes of the president's e-government initiatives, to make government more citizen-focused, to enhance reuse of IT investment, to minimize costs. And we're talking a significant amount of money. I mean, for this past fiscal year, I think the federal IT budget was $67 billion. So that's quite a bit of IT investment that you want to maximize. What the Federal Enterprise Architecture Framework is basically a series of reference models which build on the work of the Quicksilver Task Force. I told you earlier that when they were going through the mechanisms for specifying the records, the e-government initiatives, one of the things they did was a systematic evaluation of what businesses the government was in. Well, that is basically encapsulated in that second layer down there, the business reference model, which is a hierarchical organization of these 400 some odd lines of business and sub-functions that the federal government, the U.S. federal government, does. Just by doing that sort of analysis, you know, there is much information that can be gathered, and there are many efficiencies to be gained, such as observing that each line of business is redundantly performed on the average of 17 times by 17 different agencies. So you can see that there's the opportunity here. If you can build an IT application in support of a line of business, there may be substantial opportunity for reuse across various federal agencies. Let me start at the top of the model, however. The performance reference model is basically specifying a series of strategic goals that any IT investment, which as you move down the model you get more and more specific, needs to support. So the performance metrics lie on top of an IT investment that's being deployed for a specific line of business, and that specific IT deployment is predicated on three other reference models: a service component specification, if the application that they're building can be componentized for reuse; the data reference model, which specifies the data that's being used to support that IT application for a particular line of business; and the technical standards that are used in the development and deployment of that system. So by having every IT capital investment that the U.S. federal government makes match up against this model and demonstrate as part of the business case what it's trying to achieve at each level, what data it's using and creating, what standards it's referencing, you can see that when you go through the centralized management process on an annual basis for determining what agencies' budgets are, there's significant possibilities here for identifying best of breed opportunities for reuse, maximizing return on investment for IT expenditure. So that's the second leg of the stool. Now I'm going to spend the rest of the time talking about the third leg of the stool, which basically tries to connect these two together. This was disseminated via the bulletin that's cited here on the, and the URL. And this records management profile is emblematic of one of the earlier tactics that I described to you that NARA is trying to achieve: integration of records management into information management principles. We have this mechanism, the Federal Enterprise Architecture, which is used by the administration to coordinate IT investment, and we have all of this guidance that came out of the Electronic Records Management e-Government Initiative at the bequest of the community of interest. The tactic that NARA took was to try to tie these two things together so that as agencies move through the FEA process, we can link them to specific guidance that was taken, that was developed during the initiative at each stage of the information technology development lifecycle. This product was jointly developed with industry. Two integrators, Booz Allen Hamilton and SRA, inside the Beltway IT integrators with large portions of government IT business. What the profile is a framework for embedding records management into the IT governance process. The tactic that we're trying to advance here is, to the greatest extent that we can make records management a seamless background process that's part of the ingrained IT culture, so that eventually we'll get to the stage when an agency is submitting a business case for building a system. One of the first things they think about before they submit that business case is making sure that there is records management functionality built into that procurement. And by built in, that could mean being built in the background, being incorporated via records management services such as specified by our initiatives, being incorporated via bolting on a standalone records management application to the back end. There are a variety of approaches. And the reason that this was pursued at the request of the Office of Management and Budget is there are certain lines of business that cut across all 400-plus lines of business in the business reference model. The first dog out of the gate on this one was the security and privacy profile, realizing that all 400, when you're building an IT system to support any of the 400-plus lines of business in the federal government, there are certain basic security and privacy concerns that need to be built into that regardless of what line of business you're in. Similarly, the Office of Management and Budget felt the same way about records management. So what we try to do is layer information relevant to the records management lifecycle, creation through ultimate disposition, over the reference models that compose the Federal Enterprise Architecture Framework. So the objectives of the profile you can see here is to provide a common framework. So here's the standardization aspect of the tactic that we're trying to advance. The second objective links back to the tactic of integrating records management into IT business process. Both government's process, the capital planning process, as well as the nuts and bolts development of an application, and establishing a one-stop place so that there is uniform application of records management guidance to IT development. This slide basically is the profile in a nutshell. On the right-hand side, you'll see the reference models. I apologize to those of you on the other side. You can't quite read them. But here are the reference models of the FEA, the business reference model, the service component reference model, the technical reference model, the data reference model, and the performance reference model. And on the left-hand side are the resources that were developed as part of the e-government initiative that map to those specific models, such as, for example, in the technical reference model, which is the third bar down on the right-hand side. On the left, the specific guidance that came out of the initiative that may be cited in agencies' business cases with regard to their technical reference models. are DOD 5015.2, the guidance that we've written for the Government Paperwork Elimination Act, the transfer guidance that I referred to if they're creating records in specific formats which for systems which have been appraised as permanent. This is a first step. The profile is going to continue to evolve, but what we're using this as is a communication tool with the IT development industry. Often, even though records management units may be based in the CIO shops in agencies across the government, and once again, I've alluded to the fact that there's wide latitude as to how it actually gets implemented, the profile serves as a useful tool to bring them to the table with the IT personnel that records management people may not speak with. Some of the specifications that I have alluded to are very technical specifications, such as universal modeling language technical specifications that can be handed immediately over to a IT integrator, and they'll have complete understanding, almost to the level of being able to begin rapid development coding of specific services that are capable of implementing records management. The use of this profile is threefold. As I just alluded to, it integrates our guidances from the e-government initiative into the systems development lifecycle for systems. Two, it integrates into the government-wide allocation exercise for how the Office of Management and Budget decides to deploy the $67 billion it spent last year on IT, specifically with regard to investment in records management, as well as at the agency level, because agencies have multiple investments in their sub-organizational units that they need to coordinate as well. So this gets to the scalability issue of when you're talking about an institutional approach, we're trying to develop an institutional approach that not only works all the way up here, but can also, for example, be employed by the Department of Energy as it evaluates across the board its, who knows, 17, 20, 40 organizational subunits, and then can be used within those organizational subunits as they evaluate IT expenditures within their subline of the budget. And it also describes some hypothetical scenarios that could be used, envisioning as to how taking specific systems, specific hypothetical systems, through a process that shows how you would use these particular pieces of guidance. What we're doing in this fiscal year, which is almost over, and starting at the beginning of next fiscal year, is actually piloting the RM profile with three agencies to get their feedback as to whether or not this is actually useful for them or how we need to revise it in revision two. This will obviously be a living document that will continue to grow. Once we get the feedback from those pilots and make the revisions to the profile, we plan on exploring with OMB the federal hardwiring the records management profile into the federal transition framework. What the federal transition framework is basically a government-wide catalog of all agencies' OMB-approved IT deployments broken out by reference model. For example, what system X and agency Y, what are the technical standards that are being used in a particular deployment? As you feed agency data into this federal transition framework, you can use the OMB can use the records management profile to start evaluating on a government-wide basis standardization of records management functionality and automation across the government so as to potentially identify best-of-breed technical deployments that may be suitable for broader government deployment. Here are the URLs of everything of which I have spoken. The top one is the e-government initiative. The middle one is the federal enterprise architecture. And the last one is the URL for the records management profile. And there is my contact information. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Adrian, as soon as I get his slides up here. so he can highlight the Australasian approach. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Although I work for the National Archives of Australia, I'm not actually going to be talking very much about my institution or a single institution's approach to digital record keeping. What I'll be talking about in my presentation is a joint approach that's being pursued by 10 public records institutions in Australia and New Zealand. So it's at a multi-institutional level, and I'd like to think that some of the approaches that we're agreeing at across 10 different jurisdictions would be of interest and could well be applicable in other jurisdictions, because we're all basically trying to solve the same problems when it comes to digital record keeping. Firstly, though, a word about terminology. In Australia, we use the word record keeping as a very broad, all-encompassing term. It includes all of those things that you have to do to keep records across the entire records continuum or across the entire lifespan of records. So it unites what you might call records management and archives functions into the one set of unified, hopefully organically unified, sets of principles, frameworks and processes. So when I say record keeping, don't think records management, think much more broadly than that. What I'll be talking about is why the 10 institutions agreed to commit to establishing this formal entity called the Australasian Digital Record Keeping Initiative. I'll talk about the objectives and the principles informing that effort, and go into a little bit of detail about the uniform Australasian approach that we're developing and promoting through this initiative. And some of the specific projects that the partners have agreed to, and some of the outstanding issues that we're still trying to grapple with. The background is, as to why we, what are the issues we're trying to tackle with this initiative, are probably not new to any of you. It's not just the emergence of digital systems and electronic records. Although that's a large part of the issue, it's also a response to just changes in the way organisations operate, the way governments do their business these days. The old record-keeping certainties that we used to rely on are no longer there. And there's certainly in governments in Australia, there's been a breakdown in sort of the central command structure of government. The individual agencies have a lot more autonomy and ability to make their own decisions about systems and record-keeping strategies and so forth. Serious changes in work processes, and obviously the development of the internet and data exchange scenarios. When it comes, of course, to digital preservation, there's all the issues of rapid obsolescence and the dependency on proprietary hardware and software, and the physical instability of the digital media and digital objects. And as Mark has alluded to, the emergence of XML as one of the strategies for grappling with the very complex scenarios that we're faced with. Okay, Australia has a fairly long track record in grappling with these sorts of issues and doing so in a fairly collaborative kind of way. Back in the early 90s, when we first started coming to grips with electronic records issues, we, as with many of our international colleagues, we came to a few sort of threshold decisions. One was that business as usual simply wasn't going to work in the new world, and that we had to do some serious reinvention of the way the archives does its business. A large part of that was the need to not just sit at the end of the life cycle and assume that people and agencies were going to make and keep good records, but to actively intervene in the front end of records creation, become standard-setting organisations and so forth. And the first fruit a lot of that initial thinking, of course, was the Australian Records Management Standard, AS4390, that was published in 1996. That was very much a collaborative exercise, as national standards development exercises have to be. And of course, many of you here today would be familiar with the AS4390 approach to record keeping, which is now embodied in the international standard ISO 15489. And it's based on the records continuum conceptual framework, functional analysis, the need to design and implement good record keeping systems that are based on a good understanding of the functions and work processes in organisations and the record keeping requirements of those organisations that need to be met. Now, when AS4390 was published in 1996, it was an aspirational standard, if you like. When it was published, no one was actually complying with the standard. It was a statement of what we thought people needed to do, not a statement of what people were doing. And so when the public records institutions in Australia endorsed AS4390 in 1996, they then realised that, in fact, a whole lot of things needed to change. Otherwise, the endorsement would have a hollow ring to it. And so at my institution, at the National Archives of Australia, we set about doing a lot of research and development work to develop our equivalents of what Mark has been talking about that's been happening here in the US federal government, a comprehensive suite of modern record-keeping advice, tools, standards and guidelines and policies that agencies could use to implement effective modern record-keeping strategies. That included things like metadata standards, and more recently in Australia we've developed a work process analysis for record keeping, which is AS5090. And then, of course, the archival institutions have also had to tackle the digital preservation challenge, and so in Victoria, our colleagues there have developed VERS, the Victorian Electronic Records Strategy. At my institution, we have a digital preservation program which is based on developing open source software tools for normalising using XML records in long-term archival data formats. So these are all efforts that span the entire records continuum. It's not just records management, it's everything to do with making, keeping and using good records. But all of these activities have in Australia and New Zealand have been collaborative in their nature. We're a small community in my part of the world. We all talk to each other. There's not that many of us. And in fact, the public records institutions in Australia and New Zealand for a long time have really been a big, happy family of plagiarists. So if one institution comes up with a pretty good standard or policy, then the rest just copy it. They say, well, why should we bother doing anything different? And we've done that for years. But the thing is, a lot of that collaboration has been done behind the scenes. It's been, a relatively small group of people collaborating behind closed doors. And what we realised a few years ago was that although we were confident that we were all travelling together in the same direction, some of our key stakeholders weren't necessarily as confident as us. And I'm including there our political masters and also our industry stakeholders, the software industry. And we were getting messages of concern, if you like, from those stakeholders, and they were saying, well, the Victorians are developing one set of approaches and one set of standards, and you guys are doing something a little different, and in New Zealand they're doing something a bit different, in Western Australia. And our stakeholders were concerned that there was a proliferation of jurisdiction-specific standards and that it was all very chaotic, and how on earth could the software vendors develop products that could meet all of these different jurisdictional requirements. Now, our answer to that was, well, in fact, we all copy from each other, and if you comply with one set of requirements in one jurisdiction, you're almost certainly going to satisfy every other jurisdiction as well. But what we realised was that those assertions on their own were not all that convincing. So what we thought was we actually needed to put some kind of formal shape around this collaboration that was already occurring and in fact to ramp it up and to make sure that we did even more of it. So in 2004 we launched the Australasian Digital Record Keeping Initiative, And it has 10 members, the 10 public records institutions in Australia and New Zealand. And Australia, like the United States, has a federal system of government. So there's 8 states and territories in Australia and the federal government, and then the National Archives in New Zealand. And the vision that we all subscribe to with this endeavour was that all governments in Australia and New Zealand will implement a uniform approach to making, keeping and using digital records to ensure accountability and the long-term protection of vital cultural heritage. So we wanted to get the accountability and the heritage things into the vision statement together, because we don't see them as being in conflict with each other in any way. And that this uniformity will lead to efficiency, economy and interoperability across the participating communities. We identified 8 objectives when we sat down to have our first meetings of this new entity. Our objectives are that all the members, we call it ADRI for short, ADRI, all ADRI members are committed to agreed principles for digital record keeping, that ADRI supports members in advocating for appropriate digital record keeping to support government in their jurisdictions. So if you like, we're a mutual support network and a cheer squad for each other. If one institution was trying to get some money out of its government, or trying to get approval for a particular set of initiatives, then the rest of the ADRI members will be there cheering them on and supporting them. And that looks good. I mean, it looks good to government when a professional community can speak with one voice. Thirdly, that each government in Australia and New Zealand has an e-governance regime which is supported by sound strategies for making, keeping and using digital records. 4, that vendors ultimately will provide implementations of the standards developed by ADRI. 5, that the evidence of e-government in Australia and New Zealand is captured, preserved and accessible for the benefit of current and future generations. 6, that professional leadership and development is provided in digital record keeping for Australia and New Zealand, because the industry and the community look to the public records institutions to provide that leadership. 7, that in a digital environment, agencies can meet their legal and functional responsibilities effectively and economically. And finally, that the best possible strategic use of limited collective resources is made. Because in Australia, we don't have a lot of money to throw at these things, but we do at least have 10 jurisdictions who are all working on the same set of issues, so we may as well pool our efforts rather than trip over each other all trying to do the same thing over and over again. So there are our objectives. There's a set of guiding principles that we've also all committed to. So these are kind of the things that we can hold our hand on our heart and say these are the things that we believe in. We believe that advocacy and assistance responsibilities of government archives have to be accepted by everyone within government, if you like. The government archives and records institutions are the experts in record keeping in their jurisdictions, and that governments should rely on that expertise. Second, that there's the principle that we believe in the primary importance of the design and implementation of record keeping systems. In other words, if you don't design a good record keeping system in the first place and implement that, then everything else is going to fail. So it's that front end engagement, getting it right at the start, is absolutely critical, because it's too late later on to come along and try and make sense out of something that was poorly designed in the first place. We believe in that there's shared rights and responsibilities for good record keeping across government. That, you know, although we in the archives provide advice and assistance, we don't actually do the record keeping. The government agencies do that, and so they have that responsibility as well. But of course, the agencies need some adequate support and training from the archives institution. We've made a commitment to common standards wherever possible. We have a common commitment to the importance of identifying record keeping requirements. In other words, there's no point designing a record keeping system unless you know what requirements that system is going to meet. And what does your organisation need to do in terms of its record keeping? We believe in the importance of standardised record keeping metadata. We believe that records that are made in digital form should be retained in digital form. We believe that digital records need to be actively managed and maintained across their entire lifespan. We believe that preservation formats should be not be be constrained by proprietary rights. We believe in the need for trusted digital repositories. That's a notion that's caught on all around the world, and we certainly subscribe to that. And we believe that public access should be maximised by the full use of available networked technologies. Okay, so that's the sort of principles and objectives. We're committed to developing and deploying what we call a uniform Australasian approach to digital record keeping. Well, what is this uniform Australasian approach? We've articulated it, and it's on our website in the form of a framework, the Australasian Digital Record Keeping Initiative Framework. And the framework has four main components. The first one is those parts of the approach that relate to the making and managing of digital records. The second one is for the keeping of digital records for as long as they're required to be kept. The third component is for transferring digital records to archival custody. And the fourth one relates to using digital records. So to go through each of those four areas in a little bit of detail, if you look at the framework that's on the ADRI website, what you'll find is that we've got hyperlinks off to jurisdiction-specific tools, guidelines and standards for each of these components of the framework. So in the area of making and managing digital records, for example, we've agreed that we all need guidelines and tools for creating accurate and reliable records, for the classification and control metadata for records, technology-specific issues for records such as email advice, encryption advice, web-based record-keeping advice, and so forth. Now, so for each of these components, each of the jurisdictions has their own jurisdiction-specific policy or standard, and you can hyperlink off to those from the ADRI website. If you say, well, okay, ADRI believes in identifying functional requirements for record-keeping systems. What does Queensland say for Queensland government agencies in terms of how you do that? You can then hyperlink up to advice from the Queensland State Archives in that area. So in that sense, it's a bit of a portal to the various jurisdiction-specific advices, but it's also a way of kind of making sense of this bewildering proliferation of stuff out there. There's thousands of pages of website advice on the various websites of the various institutional members of ADRI, and at first blush it all looks a bit bewildering. How does it all relate to each other? How can you navigate around this complexity? One of the aims of the ADRI framework and this common Australasian approach is to make sense of that, to put it into something coherent, and then to direct traffic or to navigate people to where they need to go for specific advice for specific jurisdictions, and then to show how that then sits within a broader cross-jurisdictional framework. So if you like, what we're doing with ADRI is it's a bit of a spin doctoring exercise. We're trying to reassure people that we are all travelling in the same direction, we are all talking to each other, and the standards in one jurisdiction are broadly consistent with standards and approaches in other jurisdictions. When it comes to the keeping of digital records, the preservation challenge, we all have developed or are in the process of developing preferred long-term data formats, XML-based approaches to digital preservation, migration paths for long-term digital records, advice and guidelines on preservation treatment of specific data formats, such as database-derived records or web records, for example. Process models for the preservation of digital records in agency custody, because there's a lot of records that need to be kept for a long time which will never come to the archives and which the agencies will need to preserve, and they will look to the archive institution for some tools and some assistance in that area. Guidelines for dealing with changes in machinery of government over time. This is a particular challenge in Australian public administration where there's regular upheavals in the structures of government. And process models and recommendations for the retrieval of records from defunct systems or media. We've also got common standards for describing digital records, minimum requirements for preservable data formats, frameworks for trusted digital repositories that we all agree on, and guidelines for the maintenance of provenance and the authenticity of digital records. When it comes to transferring digital records to archives, we've got guidelines on preferred data formats and methods for transferring records to archival custody, methods for automatic transfer of record-keeping metadata, maintenance of provenance and authenticity. Now, a lot of these things already existed. Like, we established ADRI only a couple of years ago, 2004. So it's not like we've done all of this in the last 2 years. What we did was we just identified what was already out there and put it together into some kind of coherent framework, and then identified, well, what are the gaps in the landscape? What things do we still need that we haven't yet got, and who's going to develop them on for everyone's benefit? When it comes to using digital records, we have identified guidelines on the legal provisions for access to digital archives, guidelines for expunging sensitive data from public access copies, storage and presentation guidelines for preserved data formats, fraud prevention, data reformatting, search and discovery mechanisms, and also standards for resource discovery metadata. And in Australia, we have a Dublin Core-based standard which all of the governments have endorsed called AGLS, which stands for the Australian Government Locator Service, and also standards for thesaurus-based searching. So there's a strong commitment to public standards wherever they exist, such as ISO 15489 for records management. In the digital preservation space, we're committed to the OAIS Blue Book, or ISO 14721, XML wherever possible, and managing records across the entire continuum through standards and schemas for different record genres and so forth. So that's the uniform approach. That's the OAIS reference model, which many of you are probably familiar with. So when we're talking together at ADRI meetings, we tend to use language like submission information packages and archival information packages and so forth. We've adopted that OAIS lingo, if you like, as common parlance when we get together. Below the common Australasian approach, though, is, of course, each jurisdiction will have its own implementation level approaches. There's a limit to how far we can kind of have a standardised uniform approach at the implementation level. So exactly how particular jurisdictions approach things like XML package wrapping, exactly which how to deploy particular open documented formats, how to implement things like checksums to check on authenticity and so forth. They're implementation level decisions which ADRI doesn't get down into those sorts of details. We just say, okay, that's up to the individual jurisdictions to come up with their implementation strategies for those sorts of lower level questions. Also, what's not uniform, of course, is the legislative regimes across each of the jurisdictions. We've all got different archives and records laws that we all have to comply with, of course, and so, you know, the access regimes, for instance, in each of the jurisdictions is a bit different, and they're just differences that we have to live with. It would be nice to have unified archival legislation in Australia and New Zealand, but I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. And of course, the other thing that's not uniform is the state of play within the different jurisdictions. Some of the jurisdictions are quite small and quite poorly funded. So obviously the smaller jurisdictions haven't been able to develop as extensive suites of standards and advice as some of the more well-off institutions such as my own. So Tasmania, just to pick an example, which is a small state in Australia, they've got some good stuff that they've issued down in Tasmania, but I think they really value being part of ADRI because they can use the ADRI framework and the connections that it provides to do some rapid catch-up stuff, and they can just take things from other ADRI members and just put a Tasmanian branding on it and change a few words, and it means that they can catch up with their bigger brothers quite quickly. There's a number of projects that we've agreed to within the ADRI workspace, if you like, within that sort of collaborative space, and these are things where we've said, okay, over the years we've done a lot of good work, we've produced a lot of good products, but there's still a few things that we need that are missing, and let's commit to doing those. And in each case, there's generally a lead jurisdiction with maybe one or two supporting jurisdictions. So we've issued, or we're just about to issue, a common transfer or ingest format standard for submission information packages. We're working on generic business cases for digital record keeping. We're working on generic specifications for digital archive hardware and software functionality, because we've all had to build digital repositories, so we may as well genericise some of that so that those who have to come after us can learn from that. We're wanting to develop common staff training workshops and modules for the staff of all of our institutions. Generic specifications for records management software as well, and that's in fact a project that we want to pursue globally as a co-branded ADRI International Council on Archives project, because really this is a global set of requirements that I think we can agree on. There's still a number of issues still that remain to be resolved. When you're talking about digital record keeping across the entire records continuum, of course, it's complex stuff. And one of the things we're still learning about, I think, is whole of archives reinvention for end-to-end digital archiving. What we've found, certainly in my institution, is when we set up a digital record keeping R&D team to develop metadata standards and so forth, and then likewise a digital preservation unit, the rest of the organisation thought, oh, well, anything to do with digital records, those people are looking after it. But in fact, that's not the way it can work, because in effect the entire archives has to reinvent itself, because digital records have to be managed across all archival processes, not just by a couple of specialist expert units within the organisation. So that process of reinventing all of the archival processes to accommodate digital record keeping as an integral part of what we do is not a trivial exercise, and we're still coming to grips with how to do that across the entire organisation, so that every staff member within our institution can take ownership of digital record keeping and not just think it's somebody else's job. Capacity planning is a huge issue. Just building up the knowledge within our staff of what they need to have to be equipped with in order to do this work, and how to equip the staff with the knowledge and skills that they need. That's a huge challenge for us. Scalability is an issue. We've done a lot of this work at kind of proof of concept or test bed kind of level, ramping it up to industrial scale kind of large scale records processing is something I think we're still yet to do. We feel confident that we've got the solutions because they've been proved at the sort of testbed level, but then doing that on a large scale is another matter. There's still an issue about encapsulation versus distributed metadata management. My own view on this is that you can't encapsulate all the metadata that you need with a given record, that in fact you can encapsulate some of the metadata, but some of the other metadata is going to have to be managed elsewhere in your system architecture. And how to do that and how to reinvent your archival systems to do that is still something we're getting our heads around, I think. And an emerging issue for us, and I think it's an emerging issue all around the world, is the trend by the IT vendors to adopt digital rights management technology and incorporate that into their software products. And if you've got digital objects that are encrypted and that only certain people can read them, or that will self-destruct after 3 months or 6 months or whatever, then that's obviously a huge problem from an archives point of view. And how we grapple with that and talking to the vendors and the government representatives and so forth is something we're actually tackling at the ADRI level as we speak. There's an ADRI website. It's got a mirror in two different domains. There's the one at adri.gov.au, and then there's a mirror site in the New Zealand domain as well. So there's quite a bit of information on it already, and I dare say as a lot of the projects that are now underway start to bear fruit, a whole lot more information will become available over time on that website. So thank you very much. I'd now like to introduce Daniel Caron from Library and Archives Canada. Daniel is an economist with a PhD in social sciences. He's currently Director General at LAC, responsible for government records, and In his spare time, he has a second job. He's associate professor at the School of Public Administration at the University of Quebec. Before he joined the Library and Archives Canada, he was previously had responsibility for access, privacy, records, and CIO in various Canadian government departments. So he joined the Library and Archives Canada with an ideal background for the sort of work that he's now charged with doing. And Daniel will say a little bit about what's happening in Canada, and he will also be providing some commentary on the papers that Mark and I have presented. Thank you.
So, good morning. Thank you, Adrian. My commentary will be organized the following way. So, I will do a brief introduction. Then I will speak, discuss a little bit the ingredients I've heard today in terms of the solutions that were presented. Then I will make a personal observations of what I consider to be the situation, the current situation on record keeping in general. And then I will bring some ideas put forward some ideas in order maybe to make these solutions more successful in the future. So first I would like to thank Mark and Adrian for their very interesting presentations. And I think that in both cases we have to recognize that these two countries are undoubtedly engaged in addressing this very important issue. And if I want to, I like to stress this because I think that every minute we're losing millions of documents. And when I was responsible for access in Human Resources Development Canada, we had to go through a major crisis, grants and contributions for those who heard about it. And what I saw there is that in many occasions, there were big black holes. So we were looking for documents that didn't exist. So we could, it was very difficult, in fact, to be able to provide all these documents. So these documents will never be there. Because maybe it was done on purpose in some cases, hopefully not, but it's against the law. But I think that it's a fact. And in 30 years, in 50 years, when people will do research, these documents won't be there. So I think it's a very important issue, and I'm not sure that everyone understands. So, so in my view, just the fact that investments are made to me is important and shows progress because it means that we pay attention, which is great. So I will not specifically criticize or review each project because I think they both have their merits, strengths, weaknesses. What I'd like to do is more pose some questions and link these questions to the projects that were described this morning. And I will begin with reformulating maybe the questions we are trying to address this morning, which is when we have identified an issue like that and consciously agreed to tackle it. So, in fact, the question, I think, is what is the best approach to take to resolve the issue? And that's what, in fact, I heard this morning from Mark and Adrian from their respective projects. So I've tried to capture the ingredients that were part of these two solutions. So, and I came to five major elements that need to be part of such a solution. First of all, it's we need clear goals and a good vision. So high-level goals and a vision. It's pretty clear in both cases that this has been agreed upon by the two countries. The second ingredient is, from what I've heard today, is we also need important investments. So we need dollars. In one case, it's more a massive injection of money. In the other case, which I find also very innovative, it's more leveraging existing resources in the entire administration. And there may be a little advantage to that is when you engage people in spending resources on something, they may be more interested, in fact, in the results and follow the situation more closely. And so at the end, it may pay off a little bit more. The third ingredient I saw is the enunciation of guidelines, principles, and harder tools to bring some uniformity around the processes. And this is clearly present, and it's also at the heart of the initiatives from what we've heard this morning. The fourth ingredient is the strong and in two cases the impressive IT component. So the infrastructure is there, and when it already exists, so I think the challenge is to link this record keeping, digital record keeping issue to the existing infrastructure. But the IT component is clearly there. And last, it's a great deal of conceptualization also. That's an important ingredient, and I'll come back on this one because there is a lot of thinking around this, and I will also make some suggestions on how to do that maybe a little bit more openly. Still, what's lacking is a solution. So we haven't found a silver bullet yet, but I think we are on the right track to find it. So from there, my question and my personal observation is when I look at the paper record, what we see is, in fact, the question is, why do we currently have a growing paper mounting? We're trying to tackle the digital record keeping, but my question is, why do we still have a growing paper mounting? And I'm going to answer myself the question so far. I don't think it's an issue of dollars from what I've experienced. I don't think it's an issue of not having enough archivists around. I think the issue is improper management of documents by public servants in general, and particularly at the creation stage. So people are not there. They're not with us at all. So we have policies, we've got regulations, and so on, but it doesn't seem to be sufficient. And we have in Canada, we have the MGI policy, we have a lot of, a big infrastructure, in fact. We have a lot of regulations, internal regulations, to support good information management. But it's not really working. So why should an electronic system change this? That's my question. Or will it be, would it create the illusion that we've been successful and then end up with a knee mounting, or if we can say. So is there a way to avoid this? Because these investments are very important. So is there a way we can develop these projects so they will be more successful? So in my view, what I think is that we should pay more attention at least on three important things. The first one is a greater partnership with users of systems. And when I say users of systems, I mean the people that will enter the information, everyone in the public administrations. Everybody has to be part of this conceptualization. And I think we may do it a little bit too much from the perspective of, from the archival perspective. We know what we want as archivists, but if we want to get this, we need to make sure that the people understand what we want and that they can work with these systems. And sometimes I think we forget to take that approach and that view, that angle, that would help develop more user-friendly system. So that's the first thing, greater partnership with users and also decision makers. How do they want to use this? That's another important partner. Like we've done, in fact, with citizens, with this, what Mark was discussing on this new citizen-centered services that we're trying to develop in modern public administrations. So we should do the same. It's more internal. It's not citizens, it's public servants, but we have to do that. Second element that we need to pay more attention on, I think, is that an IT system, we need to understand an IT system is simply an automated system of regulation. That's what it is. So we have regulations, and we're trying to automate them through IT systems. That's what we're doing. So instead of people having to learn all this, they press button and it happens. So it's something that we need to pay more attention on two fronts. First, create this type of systems. We need to have clear business requirements. And this usually is not, we're not too bad at doing that. So we know the business requirements of a department, of a ministry. The one element we're very bad with is the people requirements. And we don't know how people interface with these type of issues. And I'm going to put on the table here that I've read a lot of neurobiology and neuroeconomics that are very useful concept there to help us to design systems that are a lot more user-friendly and that would take into consideration how the mind works when people are interacting with their system. So this would be of great help if we could use that resources to develop our systems instead of taking the our perspective of archivists. So think about how people would interact. That's what made the success of Microsoft. That's how it works. So it's so easy. So it's based on how people do their business. And the last point, the last element we need to pay more attention, in my view, is the organizational culture. We need to invest in socialization, in organization. Record keeping is not an issue in the mind of most people, in fact. And if we don't do something to make it an important thing, like we do with finance, like we do with human resources. Information is the third resource in a production function. So you've got dollars, you've got people, and you've got information. And if we don't make it an important thing to people, we won't be successful. So we invest in IT, but I think we don't invest enough in the people side of things. We need to invest in people to leverage this IT investment that we're making. So, in concluding, what I'd like to remind people is that, first, I think it's not an archival issue. I think it's a public administration issue. It's an issue that is broader than just getting the documents at the end. It's also an issue of accountability, disclosure, transparency, memory, efficiency, effectiveness, good governance, and so on. And I was at a conference, the International Institute of Administrative Sciences in Monterrey, Mexico, 3 weeks ago, where I was so glad to hear people coming from the developing countries saying, well, we're sorry, but we can't be transparent because we have no records. But this is great to hear that, because some people are conscious, at least, that this record-keeping systems, e or paper, need to be in place to have good governance. So, but the fun part is that nobody is listening to that. They're just, okay, yeah, sure. But nobody wants to tackle that part. I don't know why. It seems to be, people are afraid of discussing it. So what we're doing in Canada, briefly, is that we are currently, so the way we are undertaking this work is that we have decided to involve the highest levels of the government. So we are having this fall deputy ministers' roundtables to discuss all the record-keeping issues. So we're going to involve the highest level in all departments to get some directions and some commitments. And the other thing is that it's not only to have them once, it's the work of these roundtables will report to the highest level committee in Government of Canada regarding all the policy stuff that we're developing. It's called TBPAC, Treasury Board Policy Advisory Committee. So there will be monitoring and follow-up on an ongoing basis on the progress we're going to make. Because we need that. If we don't have that, and we have experienced this with the government online initiative, that's how we made it successful. So we are also very involved with the Canadian School of Public Service. And so now there is mandatory training for deputy minister, for assistant deputy ministers, and all executives on record keeping and information management. So sessions are beginning. In fact, DMs were trained in February, and I'm giving a session end of August to assistant deputy ministers. So just to make them more sensitive around the issue of good record keeping and what it means and how important it is for their own business. So we're taking a business approach. So if you don't have it, here are the risks in the very short term that you may encounter. So the condition to succeed, to me, is user-centric instead of archival-centric for those systems. I think we need to think about the users. Involvement of senior-level management, I think it's very important. Socialization, create a culture of sound record-keeping, and create incentives and disincentives for bad behavior, obviously. So people will be more conscious of the payoff when they have proper behavior. So, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Daniel. We've got 15 minutes now for questions and answers, so I think we'll just take them from the table using the table mics. But I'll happy to get the ball rolling with the first question. Any hands? Did everyone hear the question? Okay, I'll repeat the question. The question was, in a lot of the standards that have been developed, there's a strong emphasis on preservation of electronic records, but the question is, are we also addressing the records destruction issues, and if so, how are we doing that? Mark, would you like to?
For our initiative, destruction is dealt with in the standards, specifically in DOD 5015.2, as well as in the records management service components. There is a specific disposition service. So those things are there. They're just, I guess, obviously not highlighted in the presentation, those capabilities.
From the Australian point of view, I guess we see retention and destruction as really two sides of the same coin, and it all comes back to knowing the needs for records. The approach to designing and implementing record-keeping systems that's in the International Records Management Standard, the kind of process model for doing that is all about in the early stages of knowing what your business is, knowing what the record-keeping requirements for that business is, and then knowing how long the records that, knowing what records you need to create, and then knowing how long they need to be kept for. And those are kind of the first sets of questions that you need to ask and answer before you can do anything else. And we really emphasise that in the standards and policies and guidelines that we issue, and in the discussions we have with agencies. And it's sort of so absolutely fundamental to everything we do in Australia that it's a core to the whole kind of ADRI framework. It's really sitting at the core of that. So, and maybe it's so fundamental that I was almost taking it for granted, and maybe that's why I didn't even mention it, but it is absolutely critical.
Daniel?
Just maybe to add that, yes, we do have, it's an issue, in fact, but I think what's needed there, it's because we have guidelines, we have policies, it's greater education, because people are keeping too much or not keeping the right stuff. So that's a question of education.
Yes, down the back there. Okay, can I just clarify, because I didn't quite hear everything you said, but are you talking about illegal, consciously illegal records destruction decisions and what we do about that? Is that your question? The loss of records through mismanagement. Okay. Mark?
The contents of what was covered in this initiative was determined via, at least for our e-government initiative, was determined via a facilitated meeting between OMB, the partner agencies, and the community of interest, which are the 400 records officers in the federal government. Disaster recovery, once again, while that is a central basic tenet underlying what we do, that was not one of the areas in which they asked for further guidance. As such, the way we've built the stool that I described to you then, there was no guidance produced in it regarding disaster recovery in the e-government initiative, hence it wasn't referenced and or linked to the federal enterprise architecture via the records management profile.
Yeah, from the Australian point of view, we'd guarding against accidental loss of records through mismanagement or poor storage or poor handling or whatever, or through inadequate disaster preparedness, that needs to be addressed through the comprehensive regime of advice that we've issued. So we've addressed that through things like record storage standards and guidelines for trusted digital repositories. In other words, if records need to be kept for a certain period of time, you need to make sure that they're kept properly and that accidents don't happen. There are certain then good practices that need to be put into place. So that's certainly a part of the sort of comprehensive framework or the uniform Australasian approach that that I talked about.
Just briefly again, just to say that it's the responsibility of the deputy ministers to be to make sure that no records will be lost. But if what we're trying to add to this, because some people may forget that they have that responsibility. So what we're trying to have is regular audits on the way documents are being kept. So if it's appropriate or not.
Actually, I might just take up the point of audit because that's a fairly critical one. In Australia, the position that we've manoeuvred ourselves into, I think, is that we've become the standard setters and the expert advisors, but we let the Auditor General do the auditing. In our governments, the Auditor Generals have quite a lot of power, quite a lot of clout within government, and so what's happening in many of the jurisdictions is that the Auditor General will go in and audit the record keeping in an agency, And then point out any deficiencies that that agency might not be aware of or might be trying to pretend doesn't exist. So in the Australian federal government, for example, our Auditor General's done a number of audits now of federal government agencies, and one of the things that they look at quite closely is the adequacy of record storage facilities, how secure are the facilities, how vulnerable might the records be to some kind of loss through disaster or mismanagement or simple human carelessness or whatever. So, and the good thing about that is that the Auditor General publishes their reports as parliamentary papers. They're tabled in Parliament, they're public documents, and agencies don't like being named and shamed by the Auditor General. So when they know that the Auditor General is likely to come knocking on their door and looking at their record keeping systems, they're more inclined to take record keeping seriously than if an archivist tells them that they should take it seriously.
Not to imply that even though it's not part of the initiatives that I'm part of, NARA, in light of the flooding of New Orleans by Hurricane Katrina, is very involved, and I'm not sure. I think I saw. Is there a session on Katrina and disaster recovery here, Howard? Yes, there is. Okay. So maybe I should refer you to that session to further highlight what NARA does with regard to disaster recovery.
Yes, over here.
I think you need both. You need the top-down, so this is why these initiatives are good, but you also need to work from bottom-up. In your case, what I would say is that you have decision-makers everywhere in the systems, and that's where you have to – that's with these people you need to work with, so to interest them, because they're the users. So the problem we have in the community is that we always look at it from our perspective, saying, so we need those documents at the end, we want to preserve, et cetera, et cetera. But before that, don't forget that when these documents are created, they're created – for decision makers. It's people who need that information. So you need to get them interested. And wherever you are, local or provincial, in our case, state or national, so those are the people that you need to work with. So, and interest them and show them the risk of not having this information.
Actually, if I can just add to that too, that that's been one of our key challenges in Australia is getting the key people in the agencies to take this stuff seriously. It's one thing having a whole of government framework in place, but if people ignore it, then you've wasted your time. And what we've found is that quite often we get good buy-in from the heads of agencies, but the heads of agencies are busy people. I mean, it's good to get that buy-in, but they're not the people who actually do things. We actually need the buy-in at the next level down, particularly the corporate managers and the ICT managers. They're the people who've got to have the buy-in, and getting them to take this stuff seriously at that lower level is critical, and is probably one of our biggest challenges. It's never easy, and you know, getting the Auditor General to help our cause is useful. Sometimes what happens is you have to wait for a disaster to happen. And in our particular case, in my government, there was a series of catastrophic failures in our immigration department that caused a huge public scandal, and it caused the replacement of virtually the entire senior management of that department. And when there was a commission of inquiry into that, they diagnosed serious records failures as contributing factors to these catastrophes, and so we were called in to diagnose what they ought to do about it and to provide a roadmap for them to improve their records management in that particular agency. But it's too late, of course, if you wait for the disaster to happen before people start to take it seriously. But sometimes you need a good disaster, because it makes other people in other agencies sit up and pay attention, and they think, oh, you know, that could have been me. You know, only we weren't quite so as unlucky as that agency over there. So we've actually got quite a lot of mileage within our government out of the unfortunate experiences of our immigration department, and it's really helped us to get the people at the operational levels in other agencies to take our message seriously.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, there's a little bit of our. You may have gotten a misimpression by virtue of the, the content that I presented, which was very focused, but I would say that the NARA approach is in fact a multi-pronged approach. You're just not, my presentation didn't consist of the, yes, this appears to be a top-down approach, but we also have very bottoms-up approach also, such as specific training, which gets to what Daniel was speaking about, to socialize specific disciplines of people at lower levels, such as we have this package CD-ROM that goes to every federal employee about records management responsibilities for everyone. We have targeted training for IT professionals, IT integrators, and CIOs at senior management. So there are multiple ways to grind this socialization act. So I wouldn't want you to walk away with the misimpression that, you know, the narrow approach is top down. We grind the acts at all ends of the continuum because that's the only way you can survive.
Thank you very much, everyone. It's 11 o'clock, so I think we've reached the end of our time. Thank you very much for your attendance and attention. And thank you very much to the speakers.